You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
They moved me around already. Do I need to keep moving?
Do a little mic check.
He's not centered. There you go. Yeah.
To put the Bill Simmons picture over him.
He hates, you guys don't understand, he doesn't like playing within the lines. He never has liked playing within the lines. Like, the worst way to do this artistically and creatively, if you want to kill his soul, is to go ahead and move him around a lot into the place where you need him, because we can't.
You know me so well.
Because we can't.
You know me so well.
I mean, well, because you want to tell everybody, spiritual guru, to f*** off. I got to be 3 inches to my left. You can't do the work. It's
reading my mind. When he said move to the left, I was like, f*** off. But I was like, who's this? But I didn't say that. I just said it in my mind. But I moved with a smile.
Well, you've been doing that one. You've gotten good. Moving with a smile for the comforts of others is something. I don't think you've perfected anything the way you've perfected that. Ricky Williams is with us here, and I want to talk to you about an assortment of things, Ricky. So Jaylen Brown seems to have an uncomfortable relationship with Boston, and it's about to get worse because he was quoted in the New York Times. He's a smart person. He's a leader in the Players Association saying, yeah, the racism that exists here in Boston, you know, it's not everybody, but it doesn't feel real good. And then he has an 8-turnover performance in a game 7 at home, and now people are saying he is not worth the money. He does not deserve $290 million, the supermax that'll make him the richest player in the NBA. I know you have to have a lot of thoughts there, so where do you want to start? Tackle whichever part of that you'd prefer to start.
Well, you know, I think the idea of is this person worth it, you know? And I think from an athlete's perspective, you know, I don't want to go down that taboo lane of talking about slavery, but there is some putting a value on someone's worth and their ability to execute at the level you think they want to execute. And I think from the athlete's perspective, you know, I always talk about fit, because if you're in a place and you're not really feeling right about it, it's going to affect the way you play. And I know money is usually the main part of these conversations, but I think eventually athletes have to prioritize quality of life.
Well, what did you say last week? Don't go where you're tolerated, go where you're celebrated. I don't know how much money. It's $50 million. The Celtics can give him more than anybody, Ricky. So at what cost, I would ask you? Because it's $50 million, 20, 24, 25, $54 million the next year, 58, 62, $66 million. Nobody else can pay him like that. And if you're Jaylen Brown, what do you do if – they're the team that can give it to you. They're the city you could give it to that can give it to you, but you're not comfortable. It doesn't feel like home.
Yeah, well, I think every person, every man has to make a decision of what their values are, whether it's feeling at home, whether it's, is he playing this game for the paycheck or is he playing it for something larger? If you're playing for the paycheck, you just put your head down and you grind. If there's something bigger and you value quality of life and the way you feel about yourself as a man, then sometimes you have to make difficult decisions. Now, it's funny. I feel weird saying that because in our culture, we value money so much. And it's like, at some point, how much are we willing to pay for our peace of mind and our happiness?
I'm going to read this quote to you from the New York Times, Jaylen Brown on experiencing racism with Boston fans. I have, but I pretty much block it all out. It's not the whole Celtic fan base, but it is part of the fan base that exists within the Celtic nation that is problematic. If you have a bad game, they tie it to your personal character. I definitely think that there's a group or an amount within the Celtic nation that is extremely toxic and does not want to see athletes use their platform, or they just want you to play basketball and entertain and go home. And that's a problem. To me, this is not a shy person. This is a thoughtful person. This is a person who does not want his voice smothered by the pressures of city and fandom and sports rules. You can speak to what kind of muzzling that feels like, correct? The inhibition of freedom. And it's just, it's not even a subtle pressure, Ricky.
Well, it's like I said, you know, for me, it comes back really to the dollar amount. And it's like, you know, part of it is and we're dancing monkeys, and I mean that literally, but that's the reality of it. And we've colluded in this situation, and, you know, and I don't see it changing until athletes start to change their attitude. Because to me, racist fans, and of course, when you don't play well and they're pissed off, of course, you know, we have these seeds inside of us that we were taught to hide, but when we get pissed off, we can't keep them down anymore. And I think in any market where there's angry white people and their team loses, it just makes sense. You know, it's like you can't get mad at the boss. You just go and kick the dog.
Knowing what you know now, you're Jaylen Brown. What do you think you do?
Well, you know, part of it is all hype. You know, I say you put your head down and you make a commitment to the team if that's what you want to do, and you transcend it. You know, I think, you know, I feel like my greatest legacy was how I handled all these situations. I mean, that's how we change racism, is people have certain ideas about who we are, and then, you know, we act in ways where they have to question that. They have to scratch their head and say, maybe this person is different. Maybe all of them are different. I think as a professional athlete, you know, at least my opinion is you have to embrace that you're a symbol. And being a symbol means no one is going to see you as a human being. But how are you going to approach being a symbol?
You think that's your greatest legacy, huh?
I do. 100%, you know, because it's the legacy that continues. You know, people can say what they want to say, but as I continue to make choices in my life where people have to scratch their heads, they have to change the way they can't put me in a box. And if they can't put me in a box, they can't put other men in a box, and they can't put other African-American men in a box.
What else do you look at as legacy? Because you didn't mention family, Heisman Trophy, football, spiritual adventurer, marijuana crusader, be yourself crusader, which is something that you're, be weird and love yourself and embrace yourself. You didn't put any of those in that category. I've never heard you say anything about your greatest legacy.
It's to me, they're all connected, of just changing people's minds. You know, we don't realize, we get so rigid in thinking that life is a certain way, and we shut out information that would destroy our belief systems. But to me, the greatest gift I ever had was destroying my stupid ass belief systems.
Was there a place above all others that you hated to play, that whatever it was, the energies, the hatred, the toxicity, I don't want to be there. This doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel like sports and competition. This feels like divided South stuff.
The NFL.
The whole thing, everywhere you went, everywhere.
Well, it creates a difficult situation. It's like the rich white people have to depend on us. No, and that's not a comfortable position for anyone to be in. No, especially when they have the paycheck, it becomes a power struggle. And the funny thing about it is that we accept it. You know, we're like, oh, right, they're paying them. That's how it's supposed to be.
You're talking about just the feeling of the league. You're not even talking about stadium to stadium, right? You're talking about your actual employer.
Yeah, because that's what sets up the whole dynamic. I think if the league and the teams took care of the players, they wouldn't care what the fans are saying. Right? That's our interface. And as long as we feel humanized by the team, all that other stuff doesn't really matter so much. But when it comes to contract negotiations and we become a number and then they're measuring us, I think that's where the trauma comes in.
Do you recall one point above all others in your playing career where as an organization. You're looking at your organization and you're just wounded. You're hurt because you're like, hey, I'm a human being. Can you please just care for me? Like, commensurate with my value to this particular economy?
That's when I retired. That was a big part of my retirement decision. Is I was, and this, there's a moment as an athlete, and you know, and we get to a certain age where our mortality like becomes obvious to us, and then I think inner doubts come up as we realize, damn, if I don't have this, I don't really have shit, you know, and it's scary. And then you realize that the team has all the power, and you're in a contract negotiation, and you're realizing I'm not going to be able to do this forever. I need something more than just the money. And I was in that position in 2004, and finally, I was finally up for a contract renegotiation almost. And we started the conversation with the Dolphins, and their first offer. You know, when I looked at the offer, I was like, "Did they not realize that they need me to win games? You know, and that they put all of this pressure on me, and they give me the ball every play, and they think I'm supposed to look at this and be like, okay." You know, and I'm a sensitive guy, so I was hurt, but that was part of my decision of like, I'll show you how you do. I'll show you how well things go.
And you did. You take me out of this huddle and you watch how many games you lose because you're not handing me the ball every play. But Ricky, you're counterintuitive. So explain to the audience, explain to America, explain to the globe. Our relationship with money is so screwed up. It is the root of every bad thing that we're doing to the globe and around the globe.
Yeah. You know, and I hate to, it's not money. Money is not the issue. It's the value we give to money. To me, the whole point of money is happiness. But if you're sacrificing your happiness for money, I think that's where people get it twisted.
But you got hurt, right? Because you believe the organization has the responsibility to treat a player as a human being, a valued employee as a human being, not a disposable thing that can be thrown out with insults to the economy.
I mean, I won't call that a human right in the United States. You know, I think that would be sacrilege. But I think if a team wants the player to be happy and they care about the sustainability of the relationship, I think it behooves the team to treat the players that they value like humans.
Speaking of which, one of the more confusing things I've seen recently in politics, Ricky, is the likes of Lou Holtz or Tommy Tuberville, people who made the entirety of their name on coaching black bodies in a violent sport, then taking on political agendas that are hostile and racist to black people. When a Tommy Tuberville appears and gets power from being that kind of politician as a former football coach, your thoughts are what as you watch that?
Well, it breaks my heart because I think, you know, coaches, as you describe them, have a great opportunity to really understand the heart and the soul of a different person, of African Americans. And I think for them not to take that experience with them into politics is a huge waste. And if I played for one of those coaches, I'd be heartbroken.
Ricky, good talking to you, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week, all right?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm going to kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.